Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 There's no sound coming. Hare Krishna. I don't. Hare Krishna. Hare.
Oh, I don't think so.
I turned it on.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We're on text 81.
Text 80 was making the point that the difference between Brahman and Bhagavan is just a difference of realization. Realization of Brahman is incomplete. The Absolute Truth is fully realized as Bhagavan. Can you close the door? Starting text 81. Tadevam drishti taratamya dwara tadabhivyakti taratamyena Sri Bhagavata utkarsha uktaha. In this way, the personality of Godhead is said to be supreme in terms of gradation of his manifestations, that is based on gradation of visions. Okay? The way he appears, or the way he shows himself, and he shows himself according to the ability of devotees to see him. Atam lingantarayarapi darshiyate. Now we will demonstrate the same by other reasonings. Let's give other reasons for the same. Tatra atma rama janakarsha lingena gunotkarsha visheshena tasyaiva purnatam. Aha. First, how the personality of Godhead alone is a complete manifestation is affirmed on the grounds of his super excellent qualities, which qualities are proven by the evidence of his attracting self-satisfied persons. And the statement is, Atma Ramas Chamurayo Nirvanta Apyurukrame Kurvant Yohoi Tukim Bhaktim Ittam Bhutamuno Harihi. Even self-satisfied sages who are free from the knots of material entanglements desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. Such are the great qualities Lord Hari possesses. Tikacha, the commentary on this verse by Sri Rasami reads, Nirgunta Gruntebhyo Nirgataha. Nirgunta means who are finished with reading books. Gruntebhyo Nirgata. Taruktam Gita Su Yadate Mohakalinam Buddhya Vyati Darishyati Tadaganta Siddhirvedam Shrota Vyastya Shutasya Iti. When, Krishna says in the Gita, when your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you shall become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. Well, that's Shruta. That's what has to be studied from the Shruti. So you don't have to study Shruti or read books at all anymore when your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion. Okay. That's one meaning of Nirgunta. No more books. Yadva Grantir Eva Grunta. Grunta alternatively means Grunti. Or else, grunta means not grunting. Divita vidya gruntaya ityartaha. In other words, for them the knots in the heart are no more. Okay? The people have no more hearts, no more knots in their hearts. Question. Nanu, Muknanam Kim Bhaktiyet Ityadi Sanakshepa Pariharartam Ah Itam Bhutagana Iti Esha. What do we, there should be another iti here. Now, I'm sorry, I stopped for a second. Okay. I closed the file. Okay. Yes. To each, okay, the question is, well, what use do the liberated have for devotional service? What use is devotional service for the liberated? To refute this and other similar objections, the words are spoken, because it's a loaded question. If liberated people have no use for devotional service, then there's no use in their being attracted to the Supreme Lord. To refute this and similar objections, the words are spoken. Such are the great qualities Lord Hari possesses. The verse under discussion was spoken by Sri Sutta. Commentary. Various reasons can be shown for proving the claim that the personality of Godhead is the last word in transcendence. One has been stated in the previous Anuchet, that's 81, and a few more mentioned in texts 82 to 85. Because the previous one is 81. Oh, this is 81. Okay, I got it. Okay, that's correct. 80. In 80, we discussed one of the reasons. He's the last word in transcendence because he's a more complete realization of him is more complete than realization of Brahma. This is another reason stated here, that the Nirguntas, the Atmaramas, are attracted to him. And other reasons will be stated in 82 through 85. You may ask, liberated people don't have any use for devotional service. But that's not true. The Supreme Lord, his qualities are so attractive that liberated souls have plenty of purpose, plenty of use for his devotional service. They're attracted to it, and it gives them full satisfaction. Okay, any comments, questions?
Well, there's a good verse in Bhagavad Gita to this. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma, having obtained Brahma Bhuta platform and Bhakti Bhavati Bhavam, he changes from a sattva mixed bhakti to a pure bhakti. This perfect verse. But I have another meaning for Nityananda. Sutta Goswami speaks this to Parikshit Maharaj because Shukadeva was coming. So he speaks this verse specifically in relation to Shukadeva coming. So Nityananda, because Shukadeva is described as Avadhut Vesh, he doesn't have a knot, he doesn't have any clothes, he's not putting any clothes on.
Yeah.
He's not putting a knot on his clothes, so that's what I mean.
But there's not any clothes to put a knot on. Okay.
But I have a question concerning Ittam Bhuta Guno. I don't understand this samasa. Ittam Bhuta, that's a samasa within the samasa. Ittam means dust. I don't understand what Bhut means. It's translated.
No, you put, see the inner samasa is Ittam Bhuta. Ittam Bhuta goes together.
Yes. So Ittam means dust, but
it
doesn't mean this context because the samasa is Ittam Bhuta.
No, yes, Ittam Bhuta. Well, Bhuta at the end of such a samas means being like that. So Ittam means thus, Ita Buddha means being thus. Qualities being thus. So qualities which are thus.
The great.
Ita Buddha just means like this. It's a very common expression. Qualities, qualities like this of whom? He who has qualities like this.
So it's implied that they are great. It's not a literal translation. The qualities are great, magnification.
Yeah, well, the idea is, to make it literal, such are the qualities of Hari that even the Atmaramas are attracted. Well, that implies that such means very great. You know, such is his fame that everybody in the world has heard about him. So that means his fame is very great, by implication. Okay. Yeah, sorry, Yabu.
I'm trying to understand what it means that the one who is initiating the reading books, does it mean that the purpose of the Vedas is to that he already understood the Supreme Truths, Supreme Brahman, he realizes the Brahman, that he has higher consciousness, and because of that he doesn't mean any books to improve consciousness?
Yes. Not that he rejects the books, but the books are fully realized in his heart. If you assimilate the books and they're in your heart, you don't need to pick up the physical book anymore. Or you can look from the point of view of devotional service. We follow rules and regulations. We practice according to the book. In Vaidhi Bhakti, when we achieve, when we reach the stage of Vavanuga Bhakti, we don't have to go by the book. We do it spontaneously. It's not that we reject the book, but we don't need to even think about it. We do it automatically. And we don't have to, you know, take it, you know, take classes and take a test. And it's already spontaneous. You've graduated. If you graduated, you don't have to go back to kindergarten. You've got a diploma. You're expert in the field.
So for purpose of acquiring knowledge from the book is to develop this quality and the consciousness, change of consciousness, change of heart. Like, in our conditioned state, that we have some desires, we are forgetting about Krishna.
Yes.
Then our whole purpose of all getting literature is to revive our original Krishna consciousness.
That's correct. Yes. The rest is just details. Okay. So, is that okay?
Is we'll, yeah. It seems like a mistake.
Where?
Some small typing.
Where?
Maybe sixth line of the purport, the translation. Even self-satisfied sages were free from the knots off. The off is missing, I think, if I'm right.
I think I already fixed it.
Oh, sorry.
I saw it and I fixed it, yeah. Okay. While I was reading it, I fixed it. We're free from the knots of material entanglements. Yeah, I fixed it. Okay, 82, which has a few parts, has four paragraphs. Starting. Aruha bhumika kramenapi tasyaiv adikyam aha. That he alone is the greatest is also described by a step-by-step ascending sequence. Okay, I guess different realizations of the Supreme, step-by-step, and the highest one will be shown to be realization of him as the personality of Godhead.
Why didn't you hear?
Didn't hear.
You said something.
Well, I said something. I said that this is a step-by-step sequence of realizations of the Supreme, the top of the sequence, the final state, is realization of the Supreme as the personality of Godhead. Yeah. Ha! Huh, now, let's see, where is this from? 29. It's from Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 24th chapter. That sounds like Lord Shiva instructing the Pachetas. Maybe no. 324. No, I'm sorry. This is copula instructing Kartima. Yeah, 324. I'm thinking 424, sorry.
324. So, the Lord Kapila tells Karnima, Mano Brahmani Yunjan, this is step by step for progress of realization. Mano Brahmani Yunjano Yaktat Sadasatap Pada Guna Vabase Viguna Eka Bhaktianubhavite. He fixes his mind upon Brahman, which is beyond cause and effect, which manifests the three modes of material nature, which is beyond those three modes, and which is perceived by devoted practice. That's the first step from a realization. Nirahang pritir, nirmamas cha, nirgrandvap samadrik swadrik, pratyap prashanta tir, tirap prashant or near liho dadi. He becomes unaffected by the false ego of material identity and free from material affection. Seeing equally everywhere, he could indeed see himself also. His mind was turned inward and was perfectly calm, like an ocean unagitated by waves. So this is not Kapila speaking. This is Shukadev describing how Karnima achieved perfection. Now, the second verse is describing Paramatma realization. And notice, you can match it up with Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, Nashochini Nakanshati. Then, according to this, you could take the second line of that verse, Nashochini Nakanshati, to be describing Paramatma realization. Then one sees equally and doesn't lament or hanker. Also, Ishupanishad. Ekatvam anupashyata, one who sees the super soul everywhere, he doesn't lament or become confused. That's the second step, Paramatma realization. Then, Vasudeve Bhagavati Sarvaye Pratyagatmani Parena Bhakti Bhavena Labdhatma Mugdabandhanaha. By presence in him of transcendental devotion for Lord Vasudev, the omniscient supersoul within everyone, he achieved the faculties of his spiritual nature and became free from all bondage. Okay, and then the fourth verse. Atmanam sarva bhuteshu bhagavantam avastitam apashyat sarva bhutani Bhagavatya api chatmani. He began to see that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is seated in everyone's heart, and that everyone is existing on him because he is the supersoul of everyone. Ichadvesha vihinena sarvatra samachetana chetasa bhagavad bhakti yogena Prata Bhagavati Gatihi, free from all hatred and desire, and equal to everyone. By uncontaminated devotional service, he ultimately achieved the path back to Godhead. Okay. So, let's see what the commentary says. Sage Karnima was the father of the Supreme Lord in his appearance as Kapila, the teacher of Samkhya philosophy. To have become the Lord's father, Karnima must have already been well established in pure devotion. There was no way he could have been an impersonalist, a lesser grade of transcendentalist. But when he left home to take sannyas, leaving his wife in the care of their son, he systematically practiced meditation to ready himself from leaving this world. Following the normal sequence, he first worked on his realization of the generic supreme, then turned to thoughts of the Supreme Lord as supersoul in the heart, and finally focused his attention on the personality of Godhead, his ultimate goal. So if I read it right, in the first verse, he realizes Brahman, in the second, Paramatma, A third, it's Paramatma, even though it's by devotion to Vasudev, but he's realizing Paramatma. Fourth verse, he realizes Bhagavan, but Bhagavan inside the heart, and then Bhagavan on the outside, because he achieved the abode of Bhagavan in the last verse. Anyway, that's my interpretation. Let's see what Jiva Goswami says about that. Yes? Chose to. Just like we read Bhagavatam, and we read the descriptions of Paramatma, or even descriptions of Brahman inside the Bhagavatam. It's not that we skip over those chapters or those verses, because they're not about something on our level. Even though it's below our level, we still read it, because it's all one story. We want to read the whole story, all Bhagavatam. Even the things that are below our level of realization. So he went through the process of a full meditation, starting even below his own level of realization. You know, it's not going to, if he thinks about Brahman, it's not going to, you know, make him fall down if he thinks about Brahman. So he's going through the elaborate process of complete meditation, step by step, even though he's already realized the higher steps. He chose to do that. You know, this is his offering to the Lord. He's already a pure devotee. He doesn't need any sadhana, but he's doing it as an offering. I'm going to sit down, I'm going to take a sannyas. What is a sannyasi supposed to do? Sit down and meditate? Oh, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it, you know, the whole thing, including the elementary steps. So it's review. Just like, you know, you already learned the language, but you sit down and study the elementary grammar again, just as a review. You could say an example also, but I think it's like this was his offering. I'm going to offer to you a complete meditation, you know, including Brahman meditation.
Maybe also because this process of meditation, this complete meditation, is described in the Shastras when he wanted to
follow the Shastra. Yeah, he wants to go through the motions of doing the things a sannyasi is supposed to do, including following the Shastric method of meditation.
So, then question.
He didn't have to take sannyas. What does he take sannyas for? What is he going to accomplish by it? He already has the Supreme Lord as his son. Now he's walking away from his son and going to the forest to take sannyas. What for? Externally, it makes no sense. But that's his devotion. That's what Kapila wants him to do. You know, if his father's at home, then Kapila is not going to be able to speak to his mother, you know, speak instruction to his mother, because the father's there, the father is superior. Then Kapila won't be the speaker. So he has to get the father out of the way. So let him take sannyas. So that's the desire of Kapila Dev. That, although it doesn't make sense, you already have the highest perfection, the Supreme Lord is your son, and you go off to the forest. But that's what Kapila wants to do. No, but if we're studying Bhagavatam, if we're students of Bhagavatam, which we are, the order of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when the Bhagavatam talks about Brahman, we also read it. Not that we're only interested in the Rasa Panchajaya. So whatever Bhagavatam presents us of meditation on Brahman, that we show interest in, that we study.
In I think it's in Bhakti Rasamrita. Swami says that taking sannyas is a limb of bhakti.
Is a limb of bhakti.
A limb of bhakti, taking sannyas.
Taking sannyas is one of the 64 angas?
Okay, maybe I'm wrong.
No, I don't think it's listed, but anyway, go ahead. Yeah. Yeah, that kind of sannyas.
Yeah. Okay.
Give up all material things.
Okay, so when Parikshit renounces everything,
Yes.
But when Shorak Rishi is described as a householder, so it doesn't mean that one has to take sannyas to be a perfect guru eventually.
Oh, no.
Okay, sorry.
No, that is not. Not our teaching, not teaching Bhagavatam, not teaching Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, certainly not teaching Rupa Goswami or Prabhupada, that you have to take sannyas to become perfect. That's the teaching of Shankaracharya. The Mayavadis are into that, that you have to take sannyas, otherwise you don't get liberated. And just by taking sannyas, you're automatically liberated. But that's not our teaching. Lord Chaitanya took sannyas to save the world. To attract people, not to get liberated. He didn't encourage anybody to do it for getting. That's forbidden in Kali Yuga. For karma or jnana, you shouldn't take sannyas in Kali Yuga. Yeah, sorry, Kim?
I remember in this great festival this year, he was in the Tindabhat when he was given class, the Bhagavad Gita class.
In order to what?
No, to achieve the perfection, one has to accept sannyasa. Then he explained what we need to accept sannyasa.
You have to give up all the material sides. For us, that's what taking sannyasa means in general. But some of us should go through the formality of taking sannyasa, but that's especially for preaching. Because before, when there wasn't preaching going on, then there wasn't practice of sannyas so much in our sampradaya. It was discouraged. You know, when they saw red, they got angry.
I'm sorry?
When the devotees saw red, they were angry at it. You know, and there was a idea that the devotee shouldn't wear saffron.
When Jagannatha saw Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami made a joke of wearing red. When Jagadananda came to Rajmanda, there's this, you know.
Yes, and which one of them was?
Jagadananda Pandit came to Rajmanda with the approval of Mahaprabhu, and he associated with Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami wore red, just because at that time, like you mentioned. And Jagadananda had a fit of rage because he saw red on the.
Red means saffron?
Red.
He wore a saffron turban on his head.
Oh, a turban.
The Devan Pandit thought that this is Mahaprabhu's cloth. So he eagerly asked, what is the saffron you're wearing on your head?
Yes.
He expected immediately Mahaprabhu's
Mahaprabhu.
He said some
sannyasi
gave me, so
you
become angry, or
want
to meet him.
Oh, okay. But I don't know, I don't know if the issue was over the color in that case. It was that he's wearing something. It wasn't Mahaprasada, but he was wearing a turban, even if it was a white turban, but it was just something some mundane person gave him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in that case, I don't think the issue was over the color.
That was only given to exhibit Jagannatha Pandit affection for Mahaprabhu. There was a purpose.
The Jagannatha Pandit? Is it not Dhammadhar Pandit?
Jagannatha.
Okay. Yeah, okay, thanks. Let's move into the next paragraph. Analyzing these verses, and we probably forgot the verses by now. Mano brahmani yunjano yatta sadasa tatparam gunavabhase viguna eka bhaktyanu bhavate. So Jiva Goswami comments on this phrase, eka bhaktyan. Resistant mosquitoes here. Or we have an empty machine.
Yeah. No, it's not empty either. Not sure at all. Okay.
Mosquito just jumping on my nose. Okay. Eka bhaktiya avyabhicharinya sadhana lakshana ya bhaktiya. Okay, eka bhaktiya. Well, if he has eka bhakti, why is he? What's he doing with meditating on Brahman? But Jiva Goswami explained, Eka Bhaktiya means he fixed his mind on Brahman, which is perceived, made visible by exclusive devotional service. undeviating devotional service and practice. Well, we got your Brahma-Bhuta Prasanatma, but actually that's achieved by practicing bhakti, Vaidhi bhakti. You become Brahman realized by Vaidhi bhakti. And then you move into higher bhakti. Because without devotional service, no valuable goal can be achieved. You need at least mixed devotion, some devotion mixed into your karma or jnana or yoga, to achieve success in karma, jnana, or yoga. Tampina kasyachit apyasya artasya siddhe. Niraham kvitatvat eva nirmamaha. Tadvaya bhava deva mana adinam apyabhava siddhyati. Because he had given up false ego, niraham kvitatvat, he was free from possessiveness, nirmama. Nirmama, nothing is mine. Freedom from possessiveness. Because I'm having no sense of I. If you're not thinking I, then you're not going to be thinking my. He was free from possessiveness, and it follows that because of the absence of both, that's absence of ahankara and the absence of mamata, the mind and so on were also absent. Material mind. His material mind, ego, were gone. Didn't exist anymore. Okay? Because you have to reach such an advanced stage to actually become Brahman realized. As long as your material mind is functioning, your material intelligence is functioning, you can't become actually Brahman realized. So we can poo-poo Brahman realization, but have we reached that stage yet? To be looking down, you know, with our noses on it. When we, if our material mind and intelligence are still functioning, we're not even on that stage. Okay. Then the phrase is samadrik. Is it the same verse? No. This is the next verse. Niraham kritir niyamamascha. Nirdvandvat samadrik swadrik. So samadrik. Samadrik bade agraaka. Seeing equally, samadrik, means not perceiving dualities. Swadrik, that's what the Advaitins are looking for, to become so perfect that you don't see any duality, and you're fully liberated. But we actually achieve that. They pretend to achieve it, we actually achieve it. Swadrik, samadrik and swadrik. Swadrik, Swaswarupa bedena brahmaiva pashyam. Seeing himself, swadrik, means seeing Brahman as not different from his own true self. Pratyag, antarmukhi, prashanta, vikshepa rahita, dir, jnanam, yasya saha. His mind, his consciousness, mind means consciousness, because we just said he doesn't have a mind. But hearing his mind to meet his consciousness was turned back. Pratyag. That means directed inwardly. And it was peaceful. His mind was peaceful, which means free from agitation. So this is real Brahman realization. And the only ones who can do it properly are the devotees. The impersonalists can't have this proper, full Brahman realization. Okay. Tadevam brahmagyana mishra bhakti sadhana vishena brahmanubhave jate pi bhakti samskara balena labdha premades tadurvam api shri bhagavad anubhavam aha vasudeve iti. The third verse. Even though he thus realized Brahman as the effect of his practicing devotional service mixed with devotional service mixed with knowledge of Brahman. That's what he was doing. I know it's below him, but he's going through the process. He's just reviewing the process. He practicing devotional service mixed with knowledge of Brahman. He then achieved pure love and other devotional assets on the strength of the purification brought about by devotional service. Let's say devotional practice. To make it a little clearer. And then after that, and beyond this, he also personally realized the Supreme Lord, as is stated in the verse beginning, Vasudeva. So that third verse begins his coming to the stage of Bhagavan realization. Pratyag Atmani Sarvaisham Ashraya Bhuti Parena Prema Lakshanena Bhakti Bhavena Tatsatayaiva Labda Atmanas Tadiyatmaka Ahangaradayo Yeneti. So he's there without a mind and ego. What's going to happen to him now? Poor Kapila, no mind, no ego. But by the mere fact of his having a mood of devotion for his inner self, devotion for his inner self, meaning devotion for him who is the shelter of everyone. Which mood of devotion was superior? It was on the level of pure love. Then he, Kapila, Kardama, achieved his own faculties. He achieved ego and so on in relation to the Lord. So he got ahankar, buddhi, and manas on the spiritual platform to replace his destroyed material mind, intelligence, and ego. Brahmagyanena prakrita hankaradi layanantaram avyabhutan premanandatmaka shuddha sattvamayan tan labdhavan ityartaha. In other words, after the dissolution of his material ego and so on, by knowledge of Brahma, he achieved the same faculties again, this time full with the pure goodness which comprises the ecstasy of pure love. Nanu ta eva pratya avartana naneva pratya avartantam kim va purvavad ami api bandhahetavo bhavantu netyaha mukta bandhanaha. Question, but these faculties should also be avoided, because just as happened previously, they can become causes of bondage. So he's being warned by the impersonalists, don't take this bhakti, you know, this intelligence and mind imbued with bhakti, because they'll cause you bondage. But the answer is no. This is answered. He, Kardama, was free from all bondage. Even though he's taking on a new intelligence and ego. Okay. So this is a gradual process. Many devotees don't experience this process, but actually they're going through it. It happens so automatically, and maybe so quickly, they don't even notice it. They're so busy becoming Krishna conscious, they don't realize they're also becoming, on the way, they're becoming Brahman realized and Paramatma realized. It may be like you have a pile of leaves and you stick one needle through it, and it seems to happen spontaneously, or automatically, or immediately. But actually, there is a sequence. The needle goes through each separate leaf, even though there's a thousand of them. But it happens so quickly you don't notice the sequence. The sequence may be unnoticed by devotees who are just focusing on the goal. Okay, now I'll read the commentary here. What is that outside there? Okay, Tango does a class going on. Commentary. Commentary. Pure devotion to the Supreme Lord should be aimed at Him alone. One should honor and serve others only when it serves the Supreme Lord's interest, and thus is, in fact, worship of Him. A pure devotee should also serve constantly, without breaks
or loss of enthusiasm. When he does, he is actually situated in pure bhakti. Okay, so exclusive service doesn't mean you never serve anybody else, but you serve other people only when it serves the Lord's interest. Then it's actually also serving him when you serve anybody else. Even for those whose motives are not completely pure, who also want material gain or liberation, success in any spiritual practice is only possible when at least some service to the Supreme Lord has been done, and the Lord has been pleased. You have to do some bhakti, and you have to please Krishna. Then you get success in whatever else you're trying to do. Kardama, we have the question, I'm doing so much service, why don't I get the results? Krishna has to be satisfied first. Then you get the results. Kardama thus achieved Brahman realization by acts of service to the Supreme Lord. In the non-differentiated consciousness of Brahman realization, one has lost his material ego and mind. But he has not actually become nothing. His transcendental ego and mind await being awakened. There may be a period where there seems to be nothing going on in between, but it's just a short period, and then your transcendental ego and mind get awakened. The Brahman-realized soul is samatric, unaware of duality. He sees beyond material distinctions and is not yet attuned to spiritual variety. He discovers his own spiritual identity without clearly distinguishing himself from the infinite soul. Redirected within, his consciousness becomes pacified. That's the person who's only Brahman-realized. Okay. Any questions? Yes.
I'll complete the whole thing.
Yes, go ahead.
We had a discussion in the Brahmachari class before. That, like here this mention, there is a stage where the soul is without any faculties in the Brahman realization. But we also hear, it seems like the soul has its own spiritual senses.
Yes.
And when we see, when we hear the form of the soul, we only see it's a spark comes out of the body, and then this is Krishna speak of Shishupal, many times like that. So if the soul has senses, then what is the form of the soul? Like when we say the size of the soul is 1/10 of the thing, but is it, what is the form of the soul?
Well, okay, soul always has his faculties, his senses.
Yeah.
But they may be asleep or non-functional, and they may be invisible. The 10,000, what I was told is that the 10,000 size of the tip of the hair is the compacted size of the soul in material life.
Mm-hmm.
That he's bigger than that when he's liberated.
Mm-hmm.
He expands again to his original size. Like if you take a dried out sponge, you add water and it puffs up. So when it's, when you're crunched up like that, you can't see any senses. They're in there, but they're like totally invisible. But it's not. There's no stage in which you don't have any faculties, because they're eternally your swarupa, but they're completely non-functional and completely invisible.
And you said this. It is very. Where this is mentioned, somebody told you?
Well, there is statements that the soul is more brilliant than 10,000 suns.
Okay.
But that's the pure soul, the unconditioned soul. There's no difference between the spirit and the spiritual body.
Mm-hmm.
The spirit soul and his body are the same.
Yeah.
So whatever size the spiritual body is, that's the size of the soul.
Okay.
And that can vary. It can shrink and increase. In material condition, it shrinks a lot. Because, you know, your spiritual body just goes to sleep. So it's wrapped up, you know, rolled up into a little bundle and put away. But when it's awake, the spiritual body assumes a certain size, and that can vary according to the individual situation. Form can vary according to the bhavas, the moods vary. Your spiritual body immediately manifests your moods. If the moods vary, then the form will vary also. And one can change. There's a description in the Bhagavatamrita when Gopakumar first came to Vaikuntha, he saw that devotees were assuming all sorts of forms, changing their forms for the Lord's service. They would become birds or demons or demigods, take any kind of form. So they were actually, just by their desire to serve the Lord in a certain way, they would change their form. But everybody has a sthayi bhava, a basic mood that doesn't change. So we have our basic spiritual form, but it can manifest all sorts of varieties and changes.
Considering this, there are two questions arising. One is if the body can change according to the mood, then it seems like the spirit soul is undergoing changes or modification, which Bhagavad Gita says. Second question is if the body undergoes changes according to the mood, then it seems like the person inside the body is different than the body, so how we can...
Well, no, the body doesn't undergo changes. There's this is variety within spiritual existence. There's no change in spiritual existence, but there is variety. That's mysterious, you know, it doesn't make, you know, using the words of ordinary language, it seems contradictory. Mm-hmm. There's no change, but there is variety. What's the difference? Mm-hmm. There is a difference. Spiritual existence, personal spiritual existence is full of variety, even though there's no change. You could say that, what is the form of the soul? It's all the varieties put together. You know, it's multidimensional. You know, you may see one aspect of the form of the soul, and then you see another aspect. The actual form of the soul is the totality of all of that, all the different shapes you take. You know, it's not just one shape at one time. It's like multidimensional, and you know, different times you exhibit different bhavas. But that whole package of bhavas, the different ecstasies that you experience at different times, that's your sarupa. There is sthayi bhava that doesn't change, but then there are other bhavas that come and go. They don't really come and go, they just appear and disappear. But you have a certain package, equipment of bhavas that's your sarupa. And so what's your form? It's the totality of all the shapes you assume with these different bhavas. But as the bhava changes, the appearance of the body will change. So maybe slightly, or maybe very, very obviously. You know, the color will change, you know. You get angry, your face turns red, you know, your eyes become big. So there's these kind of changes, subtle changes or more gross changes.
So that means we can't concretely tell, like we give the initial lessons, like Bhagavad Gita courses for the newcomers, like we say size of the soul, but we can't tell what is the form of the soul definitely.
Like, soul, yeah, because the form of the soul is not something you could normally see all in one glance. It's multidimensional.
Because when you say that,
it's like you see a tree, but you don't see all the sides of the tree. You see the front or the side or the back at one time.
Yeah.
You never see, even material objects, you never see all sides at once.
Mm-hmm.
Even material objects. So especially the spiritual object, you never see all of it at once.
So then there is no one definite form. Like when he says, the Gita says the soul is...
There's no one, you know, you can't take a snapshot, you know, a three-dimensional diagram in a particular time and say that's the form. Because you have to take pictures at different times and from different angles to get the whole picture.
So when they say that all the souls are equal in the Gita,
all are equal.
That refers not the form.
No, no, each, yes, the bhavas are individual. Every soul is unique, but they're all the same in that they all are Satchitananda. They all have the same basic ingredients of Satchitananda. But the combinations of that Satchitananda, the particular bhavas, the particular moods, are unique for each soul.
This last one.
Yes.
I'm asking this question because it seems like I'm doing the when we say that the soul is coming out of the demon's body, a spark, that spark is like a constrained form of the soul, like it's not seen.
Yes. Well, yeah, or maybe it does get bigger. Maybe the onlookers actually see it expanding. I don't know. It depends on what happens. And also, this is what the outsiders see. There's more to it than just a spark, but that's all they see from the outside, is a spark. Yeah. Yes? Okay, well, yeah, you're telling us to stop. Okay, so we stop. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare
Krishna.